Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Mick Barry is with me now, the Socialist TD for Cork North Central. Mick, it's good to see you. And thanks a million for joining us for the Soapbox. You want to talk about rent pressure zones, is that right?
Yeah, it was in the news yesterday, wasn't it?
It was. So there was discussion about the fact that the government, they don't have a position on whether this is going to continue indefinitely.
Well, let's see if we can flush them out. So yesterday, the Irish Property Owners Association, a landlord representative organisation backed up by the auctioneers and valuers, said that the rent pressure zones should be abolished. Now, what are they? They're zones where the maximum rent increase in a year can be 2%. Or the rate of inflation, whichever is lower. And I mean, I don't think the rent pressure zones have been effective enough. I mean, what you need is rent cuts at the moment for people to be able to afford them. But that is a recipe for massive rent increases. Do you want me to talk about that?
Yes, do.
Okay, so not going to blind people with facts and figures, but if rents went up 2%, in rent pressure zones where people had existing tenancies, the rule doesn't apply for new tenancies. And in those areas, the rents for new tenancies went up in the third quarter of last year by 11%. So in other words, 5 times faster. Okay. Three out of every 10 new tenancies that's not covered by the rent pressure zone freeze come in at €2,000 plus per month. And I'll conclude this point on this one. They said it themselves. The chief executive of the auctioneers and valuers, a guy called Pat Davitt, I don't think he's any relation to the figure in history, Michael, maybe he is, said many, many landlords are renting their properties way, way under the market rent. The market needs to relax and let those properties into the market at market rent. That's all we're asking. So if it's way, way under the market rent, if you, to use Pat's words, relax the market, they're going to go way, way up. So that is bad news and it has to be stopped.
And government policy on this is not to scrap rent pressure zones, but your issue is that there's no commitment either, is it, to continue them into the future?
Well, the rent pressure zones, according to the legislation, are to stay in place until December the 31st, 2024. So the end of this year.
Now, that's happened before. They're just, they extend it.
They can let it lapse or they can roll it over into 2025. So I think that the government need to answer the question now. Are they going to roll it over into 2025? Or are they going to let them lapse and open the door to massive rent increases?
If the government is still the government at the end of the year, then they have about 8 weeks to a general election come December 31st. There is no way on God's green earth, and you know it as much as I do, that they're going to let rent pressure zones lapse 8 weeks before a general election.
Yeah, but before we have a general election, we have local and European elections on June the 7th, right? And I think there's a lot of renters out there who would have heard the call from the landlords organisation yesterday, who will want to hear the government give clarity on this and who might interpret silence as being a bit dodgy. Okay. I see this as the opening shot in a campaign by the landlords and their organisations. Mm. And I think the idea of massive rent increases at the start of next year needs to be shut down, needs to be shut down now.
So broadening out the topic of discussion to a degree, I mean, there's an argument that some will make, and whether the IPOA, the Irish Property Owners Association, made it or not, I'm not quite sure, but they certainly have in the past, that it's interference in the market is one of the problems that we have, you know, the freewheeling free marketeers out there.
They did make that argument yesterday. Essentially, I think what they said is that there are landlords who are staying out of the market because they can't get the market rate at the moment.
Yeah. And landlords fleeing the market because they're sick of interference. You
yeah.
know, they would have stuck around.
The argument was that if you let the rents rise, that will increase the supply. And if you increase the supply over time, rents will fall. But it's a bit of a nonsense argument. Because if those landlords are not happy with the rents at the moment and increase supply, if it did cause a fall in rent, are they going to stay in the market? But there is a point that you can extract from this, which is that there are issues with supply. And if the state were to massively increase the supply through social housing, through affordable housing, then that would depress the price of rent. Clearly it would. And the government say that they're meeting their targets on housing. Well, the targets are way too low, Kieran, way too low, but they haven't even met the targets on social and they haven't even met the targets on affordable. Mm. And that's where the focus needs to be.
But what impact would an increase in the social and affordable housing stock have on rent? It's that would take people out of the rental market who might not otherwise be there and they would have somewhere to live, is it? And that kind of, as a consequence, increases the rental stock.
Yeah,
well, it doesn't. It decreases the pressure, the demand on the stock that exists.
Well, you're making the argument for me there. Maybe you should sign up for the left wing there, Kieran. Yeah.
Oh, well, there's upcoming elections here, you know what I mean?
No, yeah. So supply and demand, that's the way the market is meant to operate. So if you lessen the demand for housing by providing social housing, by providing affordable housing, it will tend over time to have an effect on depressing the rents. But I think the big lesson here for me is that you cannot rely on providing housing for profit, a market-driven approach to solve the housing crisis. Einstein once said that the definition of madness is something that doesn't work and then trying it again and again. And we've had Fine Gael in power for how long? Long time now, 13 years.
2011, yeah.
And they've come up with these market-based housing solutions again and again, and they don't work and they're not going to work. We need to try something radically different, which is housing for people's need rather than housing for profit and really serious investment in social and affordable housing.
And state investment in the construction of houses for rent as well? Because I'm struck that at the moment, the supply of new rental stock is dependent almost entirely on the private market. So you're expecting kind of big funds to come in and essentially pay for and invest in the construction of a big block of apartments somewhere in Dublin or Cork or Limerick or elsewhere. And they're doing that based on a certain return.
Sure. So I think there's two things that need to be looked at there. First of all, we kind of need to change the concept of social housing. The idea is out there that, you know, social housing is for people who are on very low incomes. Now, it's not always the case, but that's the perception. You go to, you know, Vienna, you go to Copenhagen, you'll find that there are people on middle incomes or even slightly above middle incomes, white collar workers who, you know, are quite happy to go for quality social housing. With rents that are, you know, very far from being through the roof. That's the type of system that we need to have in this country. And the other point I would raise is that, you know, the idea of a state construction company, a company which says, okay, our job is to provide social and affordable housing on a massive scale, and we're going to gear that up over the next couple of years to really intervene in the situation.
Where, though, would the employees come from to supply that system? You know what I mean? Like, there's not kind of idle construction workers in the country. So you'd be kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul, wouldn't you? I mean, you know, just the number of houses being built at the moment wouldn't necessarily increase. Just a greater supply, a greater proportion of them would be social and affordable in your mind with the establishment of this company. Is that the idea?
There's a lot of Irish construction workers who are putting their skills to work in other countries at the moment. I mean, how many Irish construction workers are, you know, in Melbourne and Sydney at the moment? Not that they're countries, but obviously cities in Australia. And, you know, you could reel off any number of other countries as well. One of the big issues with them coming back home is the question of wages and cost of living.
And so, where do they live? That's the other problem. I mean, you know, and that is a kind of a difficult circle to square, isn't it? If someone is living in their own apartment or house in Australia or Sydney and we say, come back home and build houses here. And by the way, you've got to move back in with your mother while you do it. But in 5 years' time, it'll be great.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to have to figure out an answer to that one, I think. But certainly the question of wages is a big part of it. And I think that plus putting in place apprenticeship schemes and saying, okay, we've got a plan here. Over a couple of years, we're going to train people up. And, you know, you've got asylum seekers coming into this country and a lot of people see that as a problem. Let's see it as an opportunity. I mean, there are asylum seekers there who are young, you know, who are strong, who've got skills in many cases. Mm. They should be allowed to work, not have to wait 6 months or whatever it is and say, okay, there's jobs here building the houses that the country needs.
What do you say then, before I let you go, to those who, you know, maybe in principle they broadly agree with everything you're saying, but they have a natural trepidation born out of experience when it comes to the idea of setting up a state construction company. They think of an item we covered earlier in the show, kind of 10,000 people not showing up every single week for hospital appointments in the country because of the bureaucratic mess that is kind of management in the HSE. And they think that's what, with the best will in the world, that's what we'll end up with, a kind of a kind of a state body that doesn't actually churn out any extra houses, but hoovers up an awful lot of exchequer funds.
Okay, well, I would point to the fact that the state has done well in this country on the issue of housing in the past. I mean, I represent Cork North Central, and if you take a tour around Cork and look at places like Grána Brothar and Ballyfihan, I mean, these are big local authority areas that were built and they were successes, and they were built at a time when the country had a lot less money. There's other examples I could point to, the ESB, Aer Lingus, and so on. So it's not always the case that the state messes things up. If you have participation in the management of the company from the people who are doing the work at the coalface and who have the skills, i.e. the workers themselves, that gives you a far greater chance of success with it.
Mick Barry, Associate TD for Cork North Central. Mick, thanks a million as always, and we will talk to you again soon.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of 1. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. Our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.